Namaste. So today in the series of Sanatana Dharma, we shall talk a little bit about the relations between man and God, or shall we say, relation between the human soul and the divine. So in Sanatana Dharma, they are shown as eternal companions. You see, unlike the Semitic religion, where man is a fallen creature and God is up above on cloud 10. So what is the relation of fear and supplication? You are always afraid. You are praying. Why? Because I am a fallen creature. Please lift me up. So then to lift you up, God sends a priest who throws some, sprinkles some water onto you and says, now I am changing your name from Janardan to John Arjan. Hari to Harry. Now you are saved. Same thing in Islam. No, this is how it operates. In India, we don't have this. In Sanatana Dharma, this is not the way. God fearing is replaced by God loving. Now, fear is the most primitive relation that we can form with God. It is when our consciousness is very crude, then it forms this kind of relation, where you are constantly living with the idea of sin, mistake, this, that. Although Sri Aurobindo says something very interesting in one of his aphorisms. He says that, you know, when the human soul develops, it discards fear in that. But if you keep a little bit of it, it adds to the perfection of the relationship. So what happens to the fear element? What happens to the fear element? It is transformed. So initially, when we are primitive and crude, we are afraid of God's wrath. He will drive me out of paradise. So that's why in India you don't have to fear, because India is still not a paradise outwardly. We live in inner paradise. So it's okay if he drives out. We will, wherever we go, we'll make a paradise. Ye bhi hota hai na. You see, wherever Indians have gone, they have turned it into, they have contributed very beautifully. Whereas wherever, whenever we had the, like, Kashmir, it was a paradise which has been turned into hell. So this is the difference between. But anyways, coming back to that whole thing. So the primitive form of fear is, God will drive me out of paradise. He'll punish me. I'll face the fires of hell. But the only thing that a God lover fears, there is something he fears. And that fear is loss of my contact with the divine. He loves the Lord and he cannot afford to lose his company even for a moment. So anything that comes and veils the presence, this he cannot bardast karo. He cannot bear it. Sorry for the English. You see, like fear attached to the charm. So he cannot take it because he has tasted that joy. If you have not tasted the joy, one cannot understand what it means. I remember once someone was saying that one went, person all the time telling lies, this, that. So one day he went to the mother and he was telling all lies. So he says, mother knew she would tell later on, you know, he is coming and telling me lies as if I don't know. She said, number of times you'll find conversation. So mother listened and then she just turned her eyes away. If you just remember that gesture of mother, what it means for the divine to just turn the eyes away. What an impact it means. So that's why in all yogic disciplines, we have to keep reorienting. Anything in life, many things will come. Keep reorienting. Make sure that it doesn't become a veil between you and your eternal beloved and lover. Because if that happens, then it's like nothing. No, there's no permanent damage, but it's what the divine lover fears. But then, as he has said, that India gave the God lover. So what are the forms in which human soul can relate with God as part of God love? Now, these days we have somehow, you know, because it's it has a profound truth in it, but it has become mixed up is that the only relation possible is of guru and disciple. And there's so much talk every, what is a guru, what is this, what is that, and it's all about guru and disciple. Shurvindo says that guru is one form of relationship that one can have with the divine. And he goes on to say in the supramental yoga, it is not the only one. Mother goes on to say, oh, you want me to be a guru? You are bringing me down. You expect me. What does the guru do? He will give you some instructions which you have to follow. Now, if you don't follow the instruction, too bad. Sometimes there is another kind of guru who will, Sri Ramakrishna used to say very beautifully, there is one kind of guru who will give you instruction. Then you follow, perish or whatever. That is the Maheshwari. You know, she leaves us free to go our way, whether to prosper or perish. But he would say there is another kind of guru. Actually, because he was a bhakta of Kali. What is that guru? He says he will take the medicine. If you are not willing to drink it, he will pin you down, sit on your chest, close your nose, open your mouth and put the medicine. Forcibly make you drink the revitalizing nectar of bhakti. This is the second type of guru. From the, all the four aspects we can derive this. This third type of guru, like Mahalakshmi, he will pour the love. The first type, Maheshwari, Jnana, but above. Traditional guru is like that, true guru. And you are approaching him, if you follow, fine, otherwise he is equal, impartial, eternal witness. Then the third type is like Mahalakshmi, she will pour the love by charm and sweetness and bind you to her. But if she finds that she is surrounded in the heart by malice, ill will, treachery, jealousy, all those things, all related to the divine, then she steps back. But waits, it never abandons you, waits for the poison stuff to be out from the human consciousness so that once again she can come. And the fourth type of guru, or the fourth aspect of the guru, is Mahasaraswati. A friend in our need, a patient and tranquil counselor and mentor, a friend in all our difficulties. Very patiently, she will pick up one part and work, every little aspect of the disciple. So there are, guru itself is a big word. So gurus can come representing any of these aspects of the divine. They are aspects of the Divine Mother, but gurus bring something of that. They will ultimately, all gurus will derive something from the Divine Consciousness, which is the Divine Mother. And they will work upon the disciple. But traditionally, we think of guru as somebody sitting on a machan with a lot of mala, and disciple is below, he has to surrender. And normally by surrender is meant, give money to the guru. And he will give you some guru mantra and you follow it. Now it's between you and... But what does a guru actually do, a true guru? A true guru connects you to the divine. This is the work of the guru. He doesn't have to even say that I am guru. But he connects your soul to the divine. That's it. And if he has done it, the rest will happen automatically. Why it is not connected? Right now the soul is so badly enmeshed in nature, ignorance, that it doesn't even know that there is anything like the divine. But the moment the connection is made, then slowly that inpouring starts and one keeps looking back upward. This connection is something which is unbreakable bond, original. So this is one action of the guru. If the psychic being is developed, it will do the same thing. What it will do? It will enter into nature but connect with the divine. So mother says that in a developed psychic being, you don't need an outer guru. Simply because the psychic being is developed, it will do the same part. Because ultimately what is the guru doing? He is linking you to the light. It's not about upadesh. A guru may give nothing, no upadesh. He may just quietly sit. You may be just in his company and yet you are evolving. So people often think that suddenly to Arjuna there was a great disclosure of Shri Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But it is not that moment. There is a history behind that moment. Arjuna made a choice. I want you. And every time, whatever Shri Krishna would tell him, he would follow that. He was like his friend. And that is how a bond was developed, which eventually led to the grand culmination of the great vision on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So it is Guru and disciple is one of the aspects, especially when the master or the divine comes in the form of a teacher. Then you have that relation. There is a difference between teacher, student and a guru, disciple. We must understand, because teacher is somebody who gives you the light, the guidance. Teacher is like the star. So he is like a shining light and points the path. That's how in certain Buddhist philosophies, or Jiddu Krishnamurti would say that, you know, he has done, yes, and there are stories like that, that he has pointed the way. So look at the way, but don't see the finger. So this is how people narrate. But that's only one and the most inferior kind of master. There is a greater master. He doesn't only show the way. He says, come, I'll walk with you. So what does he do? He lets you see the way, enjoy the way. Oh, this is nice. Oh, this is danger. Sometimes he will just quietly nudge you. Shobindu describes that in Essays on the Gita. The relation of the divine and the human soul is beautifully narrated in the story of Sri Krishna's relation with the Pandavas. So wherever the action follows the natural course of the ego, he allows it to carry on. But whenever there is a moment of crisis, his intervention is felt. That's how Sri Aurobindo would many times do. When somebody asked, why are you giving such a long rope to your disciples? He said, you can't create Superman without that. You can't put them under a, you know, patta with a short leash, and you can't, because human nature, you have to go through countless things. So, but there is a patta. The guru holds the key. When he sees that you are going to jump into the abyss, he pulls you. Mother has given the examples. Amal Kiran, that one. He says, you are repeatedly going out of my protection. I have to save you. A number of disciples, it has happened like that. That even they have turned away and yet her protection has followed. So this is another kind of guru who walks with you on the path. Doesn't mean that he will constantly give you updesh and tell you do's and don'ts. Gurus, true gurus never do that. That is religion. That is priesthood. Gurus will let you explore and grow through your own nature. But wherever, because the guru knows, that's why the difference between guru and disciple. Some people say, I don't need a guru, I'll find out. Okay, find out, figure out. Learn that biting of a snake can kill you. By the time you have discovered the lesson, you are gone. Learn that if I jump into fire, it'll burn me. Fair enough. But it's your life. Nobody stops anyone from finding out oneself. But when the guru is there, when you are going to jump into the fire, what he will do? He'll first caution you. Then next, what he will do? He'll say, no, he really is very keen about, you know, this fire. So he'll make you touch the fire and feel the impulse. Still you are keen. No, I want to do atmadah in the fire. So he'll change the niyam of srishti. You see what Arjuna was going to do, and he tells, why are you doing all this? He will change the niyams of srishti, like Prahlad and Holika. And you will go through the fire and you will be untouched. This too the guru can do. This is the guru. Guru is not just somebody who gives instruction. This word is used so casually. I find it so strange. Sometimes on Guru Purnima day, people start wishing. Sometimes they send to me also. This is not guru. Guru is something very profound. Guru takes the burden of your karma onto himself. That's why, you know, this tradition, touching feet. Touching feet is a very serious business. If you touch somebody's feet, whether you like it or not, your power goes into him and you take in return the whole baggage of karmas. Be careful whose feet you touch. And as far as you are concerned, don't allow anybody to touch your feet. Unless you are ready to do this. So this is the... Or if somebody still insists, what do you do? You can't get into a fight. So just pray and be one with the Divine Mother. I have seen this with Champaklalji. He would not allow anybody to touch his feet. But there were moments when he would. He allowed me when I, you know, visiting him. I don't know what happened. I had also decided I'll not touch anybody's feet except Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Kyon main kisi ko? So I'd stop touching everybody. Parents, parents. People used to say he has become this, that. I say, okay, whatever you believe, I can't. I don't feel like my sister, brother-in-law, nobody stopped everybody touching everybody's feet. Only Mother and Sri Aurobindo. But when I saw Champaklalji, automatically I didn't even have to think. And I just touched his feet. And Champak Lal ji never said no. He was disallowing everybody. He stood. And then he touched with his finger the head. And what an experience. And then, of course, I got up and, you know, gave the flowers. And then, so you can be in that state. Nalnida, you know that story, I have shared this. So this, the way it has become like a business where people are thronging at the feet, this is not true guru. Gurus are like that. They have tremendous power. And they, you can't become a guru even if you are a yogi. One may be a yogi and need not be a guru. For guru, you have to have the mandate. You see, when somebody asks Sri Aurobindo about Sri Ramakrishna, so he says, but he doesn't have the mandate to be a guru. He's a great yogi. Nobody can deny it. Guru is somebody who is a delegate from the divine. This is your work. You may be a yogi, but you may not be given this work. So this idea that everybody who is a great person or a yogi can become a guru, if somebody has the mandate, it's okay. But we don't know who has the mandate. But it is also true on the other hand that if you think of a human being as a guru and start relating as a guru, whatever peril may come to that human being if he starts believing himself to be a guru, but that's a different story. But if you believe that he is your master, you will find the divine response. This also Sri Aurobindo says. He says the response will come because the divine knows himself in the heart of the creature. Why? Because divine is in everybody. Even you pick up a stone and start saying, this is my Lord, and you worship, you will get the response. There are stories like that also, and they are true stories. Sri Aurobindo says that you may have a much inferior person, even inferior to you in capacity. And he gives his own example. He says, when I went to Lili Maharaj, he was much inferior than me in spiritual capacity, in intellectual capacity, in every kind of capacity. And he says that he showed me, pointed something, and I had an experience. He also didn't understand ki what has happened. Because he didn't know that this will lead to the realization of the immanent divine within. People know about that part, that he entered into nirvanic silence, this one part. But see what happened after that. He asked him, when he asked for instruction, he says, can you obey him in the heart? He said, yes. Okay, you don't need. You just do him pranam and do pranam to him all over. Then he will guide you. And later on, when he came to meet Sri Aurobindo, he did not understand what he was going through. He asked Sri Aurobindo only one thing. Are you doing your meditation regularly? Sri Aurobindo just smiled and said, no. So what has come to you? But he kept quiet. He said he couldn't understand that I was constantly living in a state of union with the divine. So you may have a much inferior guru, even Kabir Das ji. You know, his guru was Dharam Das, much inferior. Dharam Das was it? He used to worship Murti Puja, ye sab karte the. Kabir Das ji ko to unse naam chahiye tha. Mil gaya unko Ram naam, kaise mila tha? We all know the story. But then after that, he realized the greatest truth. And then once he goes to Dharam Das, and when he sees that Dharam Das is praying to idols, he's picked up and started throwing them out. See, he was an iconoclast. That how long will you be stuck to this outer thing? Realize the inner truth. So this is, there are many kinds of gurus, and we must understand the difference between them. Not anybody who wears a kind of dress becomes a guru. Guru has nothing to do with the dress you are wearing. Mother has played tennis and everything, and she is gurus of gurus and beyond the gurus. So it's not about dress, beshbhusa, telling a mantra, giving a diksha, all this we must understand. And in a new age, all this has changed. It is something new, something different. And above all, most importantly, the guru is a representative of the divine who is within our hearts. Ultimately, the guru connects us to that. So he is a representative of the divine. A last thing that he says about Guru, Sri Aurobindo says that all true gurus are the same because they come from the same source. But it does not mean that a disciple should leave one guru for another because they are same. See, this is how the human mind operates. The next step should be, since God is in everyone, everybody is my guru. That also recently WhatsApp circulate kar raha tha. I have many gurus, this person taught me something. Please, the word has, it's not about the word meaning. It's about the inner sense of the word. Everybody cannot be your guru.
Yes, if you are Dattatreya, you can say, I have learnt from the crooning of a bee, I have learnt from a harlot, I have learnt from 24, learnt from a river. Yes, you can reach that state where the universal master discloses yourself, himself to you. That's a different, but we cannot fool ourselves. Even when you reach that state, you still have reverence for the one who has shown you that path. That's why Guru Gobind Dau Khade, Kaku Lagu Paon, Balihari Guru Aapki Jin Gobind Diyo Bataye. So why this? It is because when Sri Aurobindo was again asked that why is it that surrender to the Guru is considered as the surrender of surrenders? He says, because surrender we do to the divine. Divine is inside. So now I have found the divine. So what is the utility of the Guru? First of all, it's such a crude mentality that Guru's usefulness is over. I mean, I have found this so crude. It's like a mercenary. As if the divine will be very happy. Yes, his job is over now, you know, you come to me. Divine, he has come to him in that form. Second, more importantly, but this is not what Sri Aurobindo says, this is my own feeling. But Sri Aurobindo says the surrender to the Guru is considered as the surrender of surrenders, because in that, even your outer being and the body participates. How do you say, bow down to the divine within? You will end up putting your own picture and bowing down before it. I have seen people do this silly thing also. But when there is the Guru there outside in his own and you bow down, then your body is participating. It is having the joy of the surrender. Every cell you can, how Sri Aurobindo said, when mother came and spontaneously she did pranam. She had never known this. And he says that she gave everything of hers right down to the cells of the body, that all this is yours. So this you can do only when there is that physical embodiment and your body participates in the gesture. So all these things about the Guru. Second, as I said, changing gurus is never a good thing. In fact, it's a bad idea, because there are different directions in which Guru takes you. God is one, but he is infinite. You may discover the divine as the impersonal. You may discover the divine as the immanent divine inside. You may discover the divine as one who is beyond the world. You may discover the divine who is in the whole creation. You may discover the anandamaya aspect of the divine. You may discover knowledge aspect of the divine. He may come to us as the eternal lover. He may come to us as the mighty power. Mahishasur Mardini. So many ways the Guru can come, and each master generally represents one aspect. So imagine there is a Guru who is teaching otherworldliness, and you mix it with Sri Aurobindo and Sri Krishna, who are teaching this worldliness and yoga here. Not just this worldliness, but as a Jivan Mukta, this and that. Sri Aurobindo, Sri Krishna, some of the great Upanishads, they have taught this. So they are in line with this evolutionary process. But gurus which are taking you on the line of Shiva, Nirvana, Moksha, how can one say that, you know, I'll follow Buddhism and little bit of Sri Aurobindo's technique and believe that I'm on the path? One may be intellectual, but one is far from the path. Path is path. It is not thinking about the path. It is not reading books about the path. It is not discussions about the path. Path is walking in real time. So the image is that when you are standing, and there are many roads, all right, you study. Each road is offering you a book. Read it. Decide. One day you will start walking. Can you walk on 10 paths? You can read about 10 paths. Read as much as one wants before taking a decision. But once you have taken a decision, it's finished. Can't go a few steps here and little bit here and... No. In fact, that's why it's even... contrary influences, stay away from people who are onto different, because it causes pulls. There are influences acting upon us, human beings' influences. We were talking about it. Imagine the influence of gurus. It's a very strong, powerful influence. So to think that I can be in anybody's company, he's also a guru, saintly person, he's a good master, saint hai, he will only do good to me. This is complete ignorance. It's typical rational mind cannot understand the way occult forces and spiritual consciousness acts. Oh, he is a great person. He is also a saint. He will only bless me. He will do good to me. He may do good to you, but change your path completely. Are you ready for that? You know, Swami Vivekananda, once he asked one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. He said, you know, Narendra, see, Sri Ramakrishna says you are so good. Why don't you teach me meditation? So even Sri Aurobindo's disciples, when they start becoming guru, teaching meditation methods, stay away. We can inspire, awaken and share things. But we cannot have that place. So Swami Vivekananda said, okay, come, young Swami Vivekananda. Anyways, he always remained young. He said, okay, you sit and meditate. I will also meditate. I'll put my hand over your leg, thighs, or some place of the body. Now he meditated. He had some experience, wonderful experience. So normally we have, I got a quick experience. He's a devotee or disciple of Sri Aurobindo, but see, I got an instant experience. So he also got an instant experience. Wonderful. So next day he goes to see Ramakrishna, very beaming. And Sri Ramakrishna is waiting. And then he tells, where is Narendra? So he comes, Swami Vivekananda. Oh, I have done a good job. Why did you do this? What did I do? Why did you do this? What did I do? You changed his path. He was not meant to take that journey. He is a bhakta. You put him on the road of jnana. He was going through a shortcut. You have put him on a long road which he cannot sustain. Now you have opened him like that. But can he sustain that journey? That was the lesson of Swami Vivekananda. That's why you will see that all through Swami Vivekananda's talks. One place, Sister Nivedita, who was close with him, he said, why don't they want some instruction. Why don't you instruct them? Give some mantra or teach them a method, a practice. He said, no, this is not my task. My task is to awaken and inspire, not to instruct. Because he had realized then, that's enough. Then the soul and divine journey. So there are many dimensions of just the relationship of guru. But relationship of a guru and disciple is only one relation that we can have with the divine. There are many other relations. Not only as a disciple, we can be his slave and he is the master. It's a very intimate relation because guru and disciple, you meet in the study room. Slave, he will, even when divine is master is going outside the study room, he will tell the slave, come with me. Why? Because wherever he goes, he has to carry the slave. What are the wages? Delight, not just jnana, but where jnana ends in delight. That's what ultimately knowledge and oneness is meant to give you, the delight, which is the origin. All knowledge ends up in that. Wisdom is the prelude to delight. Well, then you discover the ultimate, aha, it's delight. So, he will take you along. But there is a still deeper relation. And that is the relation of divine with the beloved. So when the divine goes to rest, he will keep the slaves outside or he may even be inside. But beloved is on his bed. There he will sit and disclose his dreams. You know what I am going to do next? Slave doesn't have the privy. He's there. He may strain his ears, listen a little bit. But to the beloved he discloses everything. But there are other relations also. Shuddha speaks of that. He can become a friend. Look at Sri Krishna and how Brahmaji got deluded. He thinks that what is this Krishna? They are all going and Gop and Gopi, they are only, playing around, fooling around with him. He is also encouraging. They don't know he is God. How can God be friend? So he goes one day and we have talked about this story, so I will not elaborate it in Sanatana Dharma only. Everybody vanishes. So Krishna manifests. So who is a friend? When the divine gives your friendship, who is a friend? A friend is somebody who is always with you in any moment of crisis. 24/7 friend. But he will let you otherwise lead your own life. Friends don't say, what are you doing, not doing? It's your business. But always he's there. 2 a.m. friend, 3 a.m. friend, 4 a.m. friend, 1 a.m. friend, midnight friend. Hello, I'm in trouble. Okay, fine. Friend will come. Friend will respond. But teacher, you will hesitate. Guruji ko rahat ko. Guruji ko kaise utha sakte hain? Pata nahi Guruji, what? You can't even reach him. First the secretary will pick up the phone. So you talk to the secretary that, you know, I need to talk to Guruji urgently. No, whatever it is, you meet tomorrow. No, I'm in distress. No, you do meditation. He has given you the mantra. You do. But friend, Hare, I am his friend. In fact, he would have already told the secretary, these are on my hotline. Free access anytime. This is friend. But friend will not. There is a limit to friendship. Friendship has the sweetness, but not the intense rapture of union. Then not only friend, he can become your playmate. Mischief. Look how Sri Krishna and Arjuna do mischief. He will do mischief with you. You know that story of Amrita and Sri Aurobindo. Amrita falls in love and wants to, you know, goes to seashore to meet 4 a.m. friend. And Sri Aurobindo telling him, I think it's your time. So he takes it as a sanction, goes, everything decided. He even asked him, have you kissed? There is a reason behind it. It's profound. It's not a joke. The reason is he knew what is there in Amrita. He's a bhakta. This must come out. You see, when Arjuna is on the battlefield and we all know his crisis, what does Sri Aurobindo put? He says it is Sri Krishna who had put his Vaishnavi Maya on Arjuna so that all his affections, attachment, tenderness comes out. So he knows. And when everything, then he says, sir, I'll get married. Who? What nonsense? Sir, why did you allow me to go so far? To see how far you can go. This is playmate. Playmates in the Leela of the Lord. Mother says at one place, I cannot disappoint, you know, Pavitra, Nalini, Amrita. I have promised them. I have waited. They have waited for this moment in life. She's not talking of this life. How she will play games when she will come out throwing toffees. And Amrita trying to clumsily catch. And what sweet relation, you see, of playmates in the game. Mother is, that's why, you know, people don't understand. They think of her like a guru sitting and Amrita is entering and says, Amrit, how much is the distance between divine and man? He walks 15 steps, stands in front of mother and says, mother, 15 steps. Because he knows you are the divine. This is what many people didn't understand. So she had to make a little play to make people understand. He knew that she is the divine. He says, why should I do all this inside and going within when you are right there in front of? So he knew the secret of embodied divine. So playmate in the Leela of the Lord is a big thing. Then he can become the hero warrior and the leader, and you fight under his banner. Didn't he say to Charu Chandra Dutt that it is a relationship that declares through the ages. We have fought the great battle of the ages. He has forgotten, but I know it, like the Gita. Arjuna, you don't remember anyways. We are not expected to remember, but I know. How will we understand these things? Dilip Kumar Roy, why he said, I have cherished you like son and a friend. Friend, see? Why did he regard him like that? Imagine, the story may go back to Trojan War and even before. When he is Hector, and one gesture, when Sri Aurobindo is, Vibhuti is Paris, and Hector, noble man, he says, I am going to face Achilles, but Paris, you stay. He knows it is death. Achilles is a killing machine. Nobody can win ever. And yet, Achilles is killed by Paris. That's a different story altogether. He goes, and so, you know, he remembers that here is. So these are small little things which, you know, it's not one life. When Sri Aurobindo was asked, what punyas we have done to be here? And he said, one of the things, that relationship in previous lives, bhakti in previous lives. We think it's only one life? No. So there are those who have fought with the divine, the battle of the ages. All of us must have been some monkeys and bhalu. Bandar, why not? We all want to become jnanis, huh? Sitting in meditation. I was a yogi. All, when you read past life, what were you? Oh, I was a great yogi like this. Sorry, what did you do during Rama's time? Probably a monkey. So nice. And he blessed. That blessing continues. So, this is the relation of the playmate. And he does mischief, like Narada. He wants to get married. He says, okay. And he changes his face into a monkey. And everybody laughs and he says, what did you do to me? He says, yes, you wanted to get married. I said, okay, go. But what did you do to my face? Well, he said, that's my trick, little trick. Last shot is always called by me. Because I love you. You're my friend and playmate. So it's a great intense relation. Then he can become the father and the mother. So what is the difference between father and mother? Father is somebody whom you know that in difficulty, whom do you contact? Contact the father. All the outer things. Dad, I'm stuck in this problem, you know. There's a police fellow who has caught me or this, that. I'm dad. Dad, I need money. Dad. Mother. Mother is everything. Even jab dad ko manana hai, to mummy. You want, you know, in distress you may call him as the father. He's the, you know, ultimate thing. But everything, your everyday life from smallest details is arranged by the mother. And the mother likes it to be so. Sri Aurobindo says that the divine mother, the child soul goes to the divine mother in all her his difficulties. And the divine mother pours her heart out, indulges, and she wants it to be so. So that she can pour her out. She is so much love inside her. She wants those who can come to her and say, Ma, I need this. And you know that relation also when somebody in ashram out of, instead of porcelain, steel thalis had come. So somebody went to the mother and said, Mother, so nice. Now we have steel thalis to eat. Mother said, I want my children to eat in gold bowls. She didn't say, don't get attached and all. Because she is divine mother. She wants to give us everything, inner and outer, if we are ready to receive. She wants to pour her out, indulges. That's why of all the relations, divine mother relation is considered as among the highest. There is only one relation which goes after that. But the divine mother, in whom shamelessly we go, dropping all our clothes. We know that she may scold us, but she is the one who will put the healing balm also. She may scold. That relation is there. Once Amal Kiran standing casually on the car, she gave a slap. Suddenly, what happened, mother? You know you are on a battlefield and you can afford to be unconscious. Then he realized that his thoughts were in a, you know, what kind of state they were. You know you are standing on battlefield. That was a war going on. And the divine mother and Sri Aurobindo were in the war. Every disciple was a little mini battlefield. And he recounts it. Mother can scold. Mother can even give you a little slap. But always she will defend you. If ever there is nobody can defend you as a mother would. She will give her life to save you. She will stand as a shield between you and the enemy. And then the enemy may be, I mean the person standing against you may be God himself. This is the story when Parvati stands. Even an asura, she says, Shiva says, but he's an asura. All the gods come. He says, but I have told him, Abhedan, you can't touch him. And that story you must have read, no? When she swallows Shiva, Shiva says, please, see, swallow Shiva. She says, I won't allow. I love my child. And Asura doesn't know. Shiva is standing, trembling. Then Lord Vishnu and she becomes a vidwa. That's a beautiful story. She this, you know, one of the forms of divine mother as a vidwa. You see, even in real life, I can tell you, if a mother has to make a choice between husband and child, she will choose the child. If it comes to that last moment, save one, she will save the child. If she has to choose between herself and child, it's obvious. She will choose the child. So this is the relation of divine mother and the child's soul. But this relation has to be built from both sides. She has built it from her side, all possible relations. But if we start putting her as a guru or a teacher or, you know, ignoring, even there is a relationship which is of course the worst kind. Relationship of enmity with the divine. A person who resists the divine is more open than somebody who is indifferent. By resisting the divine, he proves that somewhere deep inside he knows. Once I was telling somebody, you know, every time the person has a problem, he will blame the divine, but he doesn't believe in divine. So one day I had to tell him, you decide which side are you. What do you mean? I said, are you an atheist? Yes, I don't believe in divine. Well, why are you complaining every time to the divine? Why are you saying, look at the world he has made? I said, you decide. You can be an atheist. Every is fine. You can be an, even atheist sometimes can be out of a genuine query. But there are indifferent who don't, they are only living, they are the worst kind of people who are living only for their little, my selfish needs. Even they will go to temples, do this. If you ask them, theist, atheist, they will say, believe karte hain. Why? Because please everybody. That is worst. But an atheist who has thought about, he is trying to understand the divine, but he cannot. So he says, I don't believe. Then enemy of the divine. Why he made the world like this? So there is also this relationship. So the atheist who regards this world as nihil, divine meets him like nihil. So if divine comes to an atheist who believes that there is nothing, so the divine will come to him as nothingness. So he will say, see, how much ever I explore, I find nothing. So if the divine could speak, he would speak. And if he could hear, he will say, see, you kept telling I am nothing, so I am here as nothing. And he meets as a vast nihil. If you meet him as an enemy, you will say, fine, fair enough. Come, let's fight. Even that will lead to liberation. Because any contact with the divine will eventually free you. And we have so many stories of that kind. But the most intimate relation that one can ever have, but the most difficult, the most rapturous, the most complete, is the relationship of the divine as lover and beloved. He is the lover. From his side he has started. And he is such a lover that he will chase you out. Hound of heaven. You try to hide where, anywhere he will pull you. You try to, you know, and he is a lover at one place, Shurvindu says, or he is a very jealous lover. He will not let you. Very possessive. If you forget him, he is going to pull you back. And say, look here, you are mine. Whatever it be. But you are mine. So this kind of relationship of the divine lover and beloved. Of course, that is not jealousy. That is the intense love and the rapture that he will not. And the union is also so rapturous. Right to the body, one can feel it. In no other relationship, you can feel this union. Shobindra describes it in Records of Yoga, where it speaks about spirit and matter and the ananda in the very cells of the body. Because that is a relation, the rapturous love. So we'll read at the end something about that. And there is no end to it. So he describes all the relationship one can have with the divine. He is the master. But in this way of approach, all distance and separation, all awe and fear and mere obedience disappear. Such a master. Not a master means you are trembling. That is not the kind of master. Because... okay, somebody had asked me to give the page number. And okay, the page number is 366, 377. Oh, sorry, 576 onwards in the Synthesis of Yoga. And it starts with all the relations by which this union comes about become on this path intensely and blissfully personal. That which in the end contains, takes up or unifies them all is the relation of lover and beloved. Because that is the most intense and blissful of all, and carries up all the rest into its heights and yet exceeds them. He is the teacher and guide and leads us to knowledge at every step of the developing inner light and vision. We feel his touch like that of the artist molding our clay of mind. He is not the teacher like, do this, don't do this, I shall punish you. No, he is like an artist. He understands us. This is like tailor-made teaching. Personalized teaching. So that's why mother says, what I say to X, don't turn it into a dogma. Shobindu also says that. In fact, mother said, don't show my letters to another person. Because what I am writing to you, I may write completely opposite thing, different thing to another person. That is the beauty of a personalized relationship with the divine. But that we have to build. It cannot be done by books. In books, you have a general guidance. You will have something very general. But if you build a personal relationship, he will do it like that. His voice revealing the truth and its word, the thought he gives us, to which we respond, the flashing of his spears of lightning which chase the darkness of our ignorance. Then he is the master, but the distance disappears. We become too close and united with him for these things to endure. And it is the lover of our being who takes it up and occupies and uses and does with it whatever he wills. Obedience is the sign of the servant, but that is the lowest stage of this relation, dasya. So with the master, you have to obey, so you are a servant. But he says that is the lowest. Afterwards, we do not obey, but move to his will as the string replies to the finger of the musician. Obedience is still a distance. Oh, you have said, I wanted to do something else, but I'll obey. But time comes when you are an instrument, he moves you and you move. It doesn't matter, you don't question. It is not even guidance receiving and then acting. There is a distance. See, that distance is gone. To be the instrument is this higher stage of self-surrender and submission. But this is the living and loving instrument, and it ends in the whole nature of our being becoming the slave of God, rejoicing in his possession and its own blissful subjection to the divine grasp and mastery. So you willfully, gladly, Ma, I'm yours. Just take me. That's it. If she says once, yes, finished. She says, whole world cannot keep you away. If the divine has said yes, you have said, I'm yours. And the divine has said yes. But he will try and test. He'll actually prepare you. Because once he says yes, then you are like, where he will place you, what he will make you do, you can't imagine. He is the friend, the advisor, helper, savior in trouble and distress, the defender from enemies. He may do whatever he feels like with you, but when you are faced with an enemy, let the whole world stand against you, the gods and the demons, and he will be by your side. Once I remember in 2000, I was going through a very personal, challenging time. Not COVID challenge, only vid challenge. Vid is root, with his knowledge. So whatever it is, some kind of a challenge. So Chutna Ranji, I don't know how, he came to know. I was far away. He asked somebody, those days mobile while kuch nahi. He asked somebody to send a personal message to me. He said, tell him. And it was very clear that he's intuitively felt it inspired. Tell Alok that he is a bhakta of the Lord and the Lord will stand by his side in every battle. It was so beautiful to receive it. And I know that, what I was going through. And he stood by me, the divine. Nobody could understand, but he stood by me. Rock solid. And I knew that everything will just go. So that's how he is the friend who stands by your side. Fights our battles for us, or under whose shield we fight. We also, like love, wherever there is a choice between divine and anybody else, as I was saying, you fight. The charioteer, the pilot of our ways, and here we come at once to a closer intimacy. He's the comrade and eternal companion, the playmate of the game of living. But still there is so far a certain division, however pleasant, and friendship is too much limited by the appearance of beneficence. Look how he is bridging the gap. The lover can wound, abandon, be wroth with us, seem to betray, yet our love endures and even grows by these oppositions. They increase the joy of reunion and the joy of possession. See, he is revealing to us even the secret of human relationships. All human relationships are a shadowy reflection of that. What a friend should be, what true love would be, what a mother, father are. So you see what he talks about. Through them the lover remains the friend, and all that he does, we find in the end, has been done by the lover and helper of our being for our soul's perfection as well as for his joy in us. But we don't understand, so we very soon give up. What is it? You have been too cruel with me. Arjuna never said that. Even when the kingdom is gone, never for a moment he said, what, Krishna? People say you are God. Why did you do this to me? Never. What a complete trust. He is the father and mother too of our being, its source and protector. and its indulgent cherisher and giver of our desires. Indulgent. He likes that we ask him. And he gives. But now again, these relations have to be formed. It's not like automatically anybody goes and manat pura ho gaya. No, it is a yoga in its own right. He is revealing to it under the yoga of divine love. It is not that automatically anybody, okay, now I will ask this and start testing and trying. It doesn't work like that. When he is the father and mother, he will make sure much more than what a human mother and human father can do. It's unimaginable. I'm saying this, I've shared this experience with many people. Once again, when my mother left her body, 2000, physical mother. So my first impulse was, I told my sister, she was there, just come and be around, I have to go. Where are you going? I have to go to, there was a center, 15 minutes, I went and did pranam at the samadhi. And I'm hearing mother's voice here. She's saying, from now on, I am your physical mother also. Trust me, I mean my physical mother, very loving she was till the last day. But the divine mother's love, when I got a fridge, I said, why are you giving me? I'll never keep anything. Because I'll never buy anything. And it's 6 years, not a day when fridge is not full, over full, I have to say, please. And mother has made instruments. Who? Foster mother. Because obviously they are her instruments and channels. So that's how it happens. Please, don't take it as any suggestion. But I'm just telling you that no, suddenly it struck me. But this is how she works. And you look at it like that. Everything comes because she is the mother. So indulgence. She indulges. Giver of our desires. He is the child born to our desire. Whom we cherish and rare. Can't afford to, you know, he is a baby. How is the baby? Because he just come to us like a fresh. So slowly he'll grow and then your relation will also grow. So he's the child. All these things, you have to cherish him. Protect him, safeguard him. Imagine you have to protect now the divine. Somebody says, you don't need, divine doesn't need anybody to protect. It's a foolish statement. It's about the relationship of bhakti. Of course he needs nothing. He doesn't care about, it doesn't matter what you do or not do. But when we take that, he's like a child. We present ourselves that let the pierce my body and mind, but not him. So this is how. And then finally, all these things the lover takes up. His love in its intimacy and oneness keeps in it the paternal and maternal care and lends itself to our demands upon it. So this is how it goes. And the last passage. So ultimately it changes into lover and beloved. Thus universalized. Just a couple of lines. It's very powerful. Please read the whole passage. Because of paucity of time, I am not able to read it. Love comes to us in many ways. It may come as an awakening to the beauty of the lover. By the sight of an ideal face, an image of him. By his mysterious hints to us of himself behind the 1,000 faces of things in the world. Even that is the approach he takes. By a slow or sudden need of the heart. By a vague thirst in the soul. By the sense of someone near us, drawing us or pursuing us with love. Or of someone blissful and beautiful whom we must discover. We may seek after him passionately and pursue the unseen beloved, but also the lover whom we think not of may pursue us, may even come upon us in the midst of the world and seize on us for his own, whether at first we will or not. He may come like Saul of Tarsus, like, you know, Amal Kiran, how he came, my own life, how in the marketplace suddenly, you know, a bookie is pushing me. He can come like that. Amal Kiran goes to a bookstore and, you know, shoe store. And there's a newspaper in which there is an article on Sri Aurobindo. Critical article. But he says, oh, this can be my guru. How does he see his ideal face? Oh, he's so handsome. So majestic. And then he says, Mother, did he say anything about me? Mother said, yes, he said, he is very handsome. As you approach him, so he comes to you. Even he may come to us at first as an enemy with the wrath of love. Why have you been away from me so long? So he may come like that.
and our earliest relations with him may be those of battle and struggle. Where first there is love and attraction, the relations between the divine and the soul may still for long be checkered and misunderstanding and offense, jealousy and wrath. You are giving more time to somebody. Wrath. Why don't you keep me near you in your service? He'll say, you are near me. This is physically near. You are psychically near. Strife and the quarrels of love, hope and despair and the pain of absence and separation. We throw up all the passions of the heart against him till they are purified into a soul ecstasy of bliss and oneness. But that too is monotony. It is not possible for the tongue of human speech to tell all the utter unity and all the eternal variety of the ananda of divine love. Our higher and lower members are both flooded with it. The mind and life no less than the soul, even the physical body takes its share of the joy. Feels the touch, is filled in all its limbs, veins, nerves with the flowing of the wine of the ecstasy, amrita. Love and ananda are the last word of being, the secret of secrets, the mystery of mysteries. And finally, toward the end he says, we have the absolute union of the divine with the human spirit. Sayujya. So the lover of God does not seek mukti, that he clarifies. But for love, complete union is mukti. Liberation has to it no other sense, and it includes all kinds of mukti together. For nor are they in the end, as some would have it, merely successive to each other, and therefore mutually exclusive. We have the absolute union of the divine with the human spirit. Sayujya in that reveals itself a content of all that depends here upon difference. But there the difference is only a form of oneness. Ananda too of nearness and contact and mutual presence. Samipya, Salokya, ananda of mutual reflection. The thing that we call likeness, sadrashya, we grow into the likeness of the divine. We grow into a nearness of the divine. And other wonderful things too, for which language has as yet no name. And this powerful sentence with which he stops, one of my most favorites. Look the power in it. But you can't do it this way. Oh, this is it. Then let me be a bhakta. Let me give myself. As Sri Aurobindo says, that those who give themselves absolutely to the divine gives themselves absolutely to them. For them, the heights of ananda and everything. But he says, only you can't do it by this idea that I'll get this. Because then it's no more giving. So this last sentence has to be read with this proviso. There is nothing which is beyond the reach of the God lover or denied to him. For he is the favorite of the divine lover and the self of the beloved. Prabal prem ke pale padkar prabhu ko niyam badalte dekha. Apna maan rahe na rahe par bhakt ka maan na talte dekha. People still say Krishna, no? That oh, he lied, he broke his promise. He said, all I will take. But Arjuna, he is a hero. But I will not allow anything to come between Arjuna and the world because I stand there. So there is nothing which is beyond the reach of the God lover or denied to him. For he is the favorite of the divine lover and the self of the beloved.